deserve every cent. Now that's bullshit. Now you got third world debt. Now that's bullshit. You get your check, there's never nothing left. Now that's bullshit. Then you pay tax on what you spend. Now that's bullshit. Then you even gotta pay tax on your pension. Now that's bullshit. They still wanna take your inheritance. Now that's bullshit. English kids rapping American. Now that's bullshit. The war is bullshit. It's all bullshit.
All right, welcome to the early morning edition.
Yes.
The Cosmopolitan Hour. It's
10 o'clock. In the morning.
Wow. And I was actually over here at 7:45 in the morning, which is hellishly horrible for me, but I managed to make it work.
And I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Because, you know.
So before I forget, because I have a really bad memory and I already forgot the horrible pun I saw like 3 hours ago, mm-hmm. We talked in the last episode about this guy with a custom license plate that indicated he had erectile dysfunction.
Right.
And I saw another great license plate, another custom plate, naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Although, actually, there was one, I can't remember if you were with me or if it was somebody else, but we saw just a standard issue, like, what do you call it? You know, randomly generated license plate. And in California, the license plate format is usually number, 3 letters, 3 numbers. So this randomly generated license plate, the 3 letters were VAG. So it said VAG. Yeah.
You think that, like, in a country where you can't say I love tofu on your license plate, they'd just get rid of that combination of letters.
Yeah, totally.
But whatever.
Yeah, they wouldn't let a guy named Jesus get a custom license plate with his own name on it because that was interpreted as religious. Although, I don't know, if you name Muhammad, you might be able to get a license plate with your name on it.
We're a Christian-centric society.
Yeah. You know, my friend Yahweh was able to get a license plate with his name on it. Anyway, this custom plate I saw today on the way over to the city was, it was another one that I think is open for interpretation. It mm-hmm. said, GR8CHI2. So, Great Chi 2. But I looked at it and I thought, you know, that probably means, like, chi times two. So, like, great chi-chis. So they're, like, bragging about their awesome rack. Although they probably meant it to be like, I've got great feng shui in this car, and my chi is so great.
That's...
I like the idea of them being like, great. I got some great chi-chis, y'all.
I like that way better than I like the idea of somebody being all into the chi of their car.
Yeah.
Or in their life, generally. Yeah.
I mean, and it was a Prius, too, so they were totally like,
oh, nice.
I've got excellent karma.
Right.
No because pun I drive intended.
Because I drive a Prius.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And then I saw a truck with, it was a food delivery truck, and it had a horrible pun on it, but of course I can't remember it because, all my brain cells are gone. But Ricky Gervais said on his podcast that puns are the lowest form of humor. Thoughts?
You know, I think that puns actually can be quite clever. I mean, far be it from me to quibble with the legendary talent of Ricky Gervais, but...
Well, I have issues with some of the shit he says, but in general, I like him.
What do you have issues with? What has he said? I'm not terribly familiar with anything that he's done outside of, you know, just basically his TV and movies.
Oh, well, I know his stand-up act was really controversial because he, I know in one of his acts he made fun of people with, chronic fatigue syndrome and basically insinuated that people are just making it up because they're fucking lazy.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah, he's got a lot of issues with fat people, which is ironic because he's let himself go a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the first to acknowledge it, you know. He says something like, you know, every morning I wake up and I look in the mirror and I say, you fat bastard. So he's
a
self-hating
fat person, right.
And he's, you know, he's said some other stuff. And, you know, he talks a lot about, like, abstract animal rights. He's a total speciesist, you know, he thinks while animals have rights, he thinks fur is horrible, and I think he might have, he wrote to the Queen on behalf of PETA to get her guards to stop using actual bear skin in their hats, but, you know, he's not vegetarian or anything.
Right.
You know, I think he's made some statements alluding to the fact that animals are lesser beings than humans, and, you know.
Ah, dear. Oh, well.
I mean, he is a very funny person, and I think a lot of his humor comes from saying really inappropriate things, but, you know, there are things he says that he's completely serious about, and I'm like, whoa, Ricky, back that shit up.
Yeah. Well, fair enough. As for his pun, I wouldn't quibble with him as a humorist, because
yeah.
I'm enough. Not that funny, and he's pretty funny, so. But I don't know, I kind of like puns sometimes. I mean, they're like that kind of ironic humor. I guess they've kind of come full circle, where it's kind of like, you don't think, oh my god, that's hilarious in
yeah.
its own right. You're just kind of like, that's so lame, it's so funny.
Yeah.
You know? So.
I really only make puns in order to induce groans in other people.
But sometimes that's what you want to
exactly,
do.
Exactly, exactly.
So there you go. It's like
I revel in making people uncomfortable.
The right tool for the right job.
Yeah, which I think Ricky Gervais should appreciate, you know, considering his entire brand of humor is based around making other people uncomfortable.
Yes, yes, it's true.
So yeah, great chi-chis and bad puns.
Yeah. And that's been our morning so
and,
far.
And, yeah, I'm all out of material. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Well, no, we have a few things to talk about. We have
take the lead, because I need my second cup of coffee right now.
All right, yeah, I'm working on mine, too. This is instead of the drunk cast, this is the coffee cast, because
yeah.
both of us need to wake our brains up.
Yeah, and then we'll start drinking.
Right.
In fact, could you Irish up this coffee for me?
I'm fresh out of whiskey right now. I know.
I'll take antifreeze. rubbing alcohol. Polish remover.
I can oblige with the rubbing alcohol, I
mouthwash.
Think.
All yeah. right.
See,
these are all tips I picked up from watching Intervention. I'm like, oh, hey.
Really?
Good
so
to
can
know.
You actually drink antifreeze? I mean, what
no,
tell
no,
you?
No. Well, people put antifreeze in alcohol, like in wine, to speed up. It's either to develop the flavor, which seems counterintuitive, or
yes.
to develop the alcohol content faster.
Okay.
It's something to do with, you know, making it fuck you up faster.
Right.
But antifreeze by itself isn't really intoxicating, I don't think.
I see.
But yeah, there was a very sad episode of Intervention where this woman was like a severe extreme alcoholic. Like, she had to have something with alcohol in her hand at all times, and she would swig like every 5 seconds. And when she couldn't get alcohol, she would drink mouthwash. It was really,
wow.
really sad. But she got the help she needed. Hooray!
And is she well on her way to recovery? Or?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah.
That's what I like to hear.
Yes.
Man.
So, yeah, anyway.
So, anyways, now that we're all thinking about alcoholism, the serious,
yeah.
horrible addiction.
Later on, I'll show you how to make a bong out of a soda pop can.
And I'll show you how to make one out of an apple.
Then later on, we'll have a guest star that will tell us how to make a crack pipe out of a motorcycle spark plug.
Ah, dear.
All this and more on the Cosmopolitan Hour.
Oh, our talking shit segment.
Yes.
Should we get to it now?
Let's talk some shit.
Okay, so we had kind of an aggro morning because
yeah.
Erica came over and she was wearing the same shirt as me, and so I had to beat that bitch down, and
yeah.
so
I deserved it.
Yeah. We both were a little bit, you know.
Whoa.
A little worked up.
I got Gmail chat messing up my...
Uh-oh.
Wait.
And when Erica opens up her Gmail, I noticed that she has opened a message that says, ICP, nuts drop.
Oh, that was Pranjal's mail. Because
oh.
he leaves himself logged
oh,
into my computer.
I actually
shouldn't have closed that window. I should have entered a new Facebook update. Because every time he leaves himself logged in on my computer, I enter one for him.
Ah.
First one was that he'd bought a new iPhone, and then the second one was that he's really looking forward to the next Dan Brown novel.
That shows him.
But anyway, it's too late now, so someday he'll learn.
That's like when I used to work at the record store, we had a real problem with Facebook, because,
yeah.
you know, a lot of downtime working there. But one guy, the assistant manager, was notorious for getting into people's Facebooks and updating their statuses to obscene or,
yeah.
you know,
embarrassing
farting related kinds of things. So, and actually I logged onto Facebook and I realized that one of my friends who worked at the record store had recently gotten hit by this guy, and
I farted and it was wet. No,
it totally gave me like a little pang of homesickness. I was Aww. Just kind of like, oh, Clint, I wish you were here to update my Facebook status erroneously.
Aww.
Anyway,
good times. So yeah, shit talking.
Shit
without
talking.
Further ado.
Yeah. So, this is something that's kind of been brewing in my mind and maybe yours for a while.
Yeah.
And that is, I'm just going to say it, the anti-marriage movement. Now, I realize that there are a lot of different reasons for not wanting to get married. And I think that, you know, if you don't want to get married, that that's totally a valid decision. And I totally support you. I myself have gone through phases in my life where I've kind of considered myself maybe anti-marriage a little bit. I don't think I've ever really gone so far as to make it kind of like a big part of my identity, you mm-hmm. know? So I understand that there are lots of really valid and good reasons to oppose kind of the marriage industrial complex, which is kind of what I call, you know, the whole wedding industry
yeah.
and all of the like bullshit kind of societal standards and myths and everything that are set up around weddings and marriage. And, you know, I'm not down with that at all, but I really have to say that I'm starting to get really pissed off by people who run around saying that they are anti-marriage and how great it is that they are anti-marriage, because I think that that really just kind of means that you're intolerant of other people's decisions about their mm-hmm. lives. And I think that that's, one, kind of paternalistic and inherently anti-feminist, and two, just kind of bullshit, you know? Like,
yeah.
I don't think that you would appreciate it very much if I were to come into your house and say, like, Erica, I don't approve of the color that you're painting your walls. I think that that's my business, and I
yeah.
don't approve, and I'm anti-green walls.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of not my business, right?
Nope.
I could be anti-green walls in my own house.
Sure.
But I think that running around and telling people not to paint their walls green is just kind of a bad use of my time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've noticed a lot of people putting a lot of time and energy into, like, creating these kind of anti-marriage rationales and then defending them when, frankly, I think it's just another kind of intolerance. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why it gets so much deference within the more, like, progressive communities.
Right.
You know? Like, if I'm anti-gay marriage, then
yeah.
I'm...
Then
you're
that's
an not
asshole.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm a bigoted asshole. But if I'm
yeah.
anti-marriage for everybody, then I'm, like, a progressive hero.
Yeah.
I don't see it that way.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, interesting that you bring up gay marriage, because I think there's a lot of parallels here. I mean,
mm-hmm.
if, for example, you are married.
I am married.
Are you not? And I don't see how you being married affects my relationship with my significant other.
No.
And it wouldn't affect my relationship with my significant other if you were married to another woman. Or
right.
if you were a dude married to another dude. And, you know, the anti-gay marriage people are saying, you know, that it affects the definition of marriage, and it changes the definition of marriage, and, you know, it's...
And it lessens the institution of marriage.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not your fucking life, it doesn't affect you, it doesn't hurt you or other people, it's between two consenting adults, fucking let it go, you know? If it's not for you, that's totally cool. And I, like you said, I completely understand the reasons for people not being into the concept of marriage for
mm-hmm.
themselves. But, you know, some people are into that. And, you know, I personally think the idea of the father walking the woman down the aisle is totally
oh,
disgusting.
Hell no.
And the idea of the white dress and, you know, the fact that the bride's parents are expected to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on this ceremony to, you know, that has its roots in celebrating...
Getting
her...
rid of your daughter,
especially. Yeah. Treating a woman as chattel and, you know, celebrating her sexual purity, quote unquote. All of that disgusts me. But I know that some people really want that for themselves, and they don't go into it thinking, like, all right, I'm gonna have my dad walk me down the aisle because I'm his property, and he's gonna give me to my husband to be his property. I mean, obviously, if you're one of the Duggars, you think that. But,
right.
you know, I recognize that not everybody that wants a white wedding dress and, you know, five bridesmaids and a big church wedding with tons of flowers views it that way. Yeah. I know some people just really want the tradition, or they really want the pomp and circumstance. And, you know, I'm okay with that. I am secure with them doing that without it threatening my own personal relationships.
Right. And, I mean, I think I'm living proof that you actually can get married without having your dad walk you down the aisle and without wearing a white dress and without getting your family, if you're the woman, to spend a bunch of money on the wedding. Because I did all of those things. And I personally get really sick of hearing people kind of paint all married people with the same brush. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because you're married, you're all the same. You're all buying into this patriarchal, bullshit, anti-feminist, you know, just oppressive regime. And I think that what we should be thinking instead is how we can be redefining marriage to fit mm-hmm. all of the people who are married, instead of thinking yeah. about how marriage, the institution, defines all of the people who buy into it. I don't see my marriage as being terribly traditional. I mean, like, mm-hmm. we're not, you know, fucking horses on the side or whatever, but, like, we're, you know, like, we don't really have necessarily traditional gender roles. We both yeah. cook, and...
Whoa!
Yeah, I know. Lately, he's been making better stuff than me. I'm a little... I don't know. But, And, you know, like, he doesn't come home and to me in my house dress and
yeah.
me mixing him a martini so that he can relax after a long day's work. Yeah. So if he hears this, I'm sure that he'd say, why don't you do
hey.
That? But, yeah, I really resent being lumped in with all these, you know, bridezillas or, like, yeah. fundamentalist Christians or whatever else. Yeah. Like, I have my own reasons for being married, and I don't want to... you know, have to trot out my progressive reasons mm-hmm. or my valid reasons for being married because some asshole is going to say that because I'm married, I'm a, you know, yeah. a bad progressive or a bad feminist, or, you know, that I've made this mistake, or that I'm this, you know, drone or this dupe yeah. or whatever else. And I'm just, I don't know. Like, it's, I guess it's not that big a deal, and I can ignore it and whatever, but
I think it also bears saying that people who are unilaterally, like, anti-marriage, nobody should ever get married, are speaking from a place of enormous privilege. Yeah. I mean, there are people, and, you know, I say this knowing that a year ago, on this day, I was working my ass off in the No-On-8 headquarters for people who were in severe emotional distress because the government was telling them who they could spend the rest of their life with. Well, not who they could spend the rest of their life with, but, you know, they were telling them that you're not allowed to call somebody of the same gender your spouse.
Right, right.
You know, so it's an enormous privilege to say, like, well, whatever, all marriage is evil, all marriage is bullshit, because there are some people who, you know, are literally clamoring for the right to get married, just to yeah. have that choice.
Yeah.
And also from the perspective of, you know, spouses who aren't always from the same country.
Yes.
You know, some people are forced into marriage by heteronormativity or, you know, what have you. It's another form of the government interfering with your personal life. Mm-hmm. But in this case, you're forced to get married because the U.S. government does not give visas for significant others. The U.S. government does not give visas for same-sex partners. You can only get your spouse into the United States. You can't get your partner, your life partner, or your significant other, or, you know, if you're in a polyamorous relationship, you can't get the third person in the country, you know?
Yeah.
So there are people who may not necessarily be ready for marriage, or may not necessarily want marriage for themselves. They might not know how they feel about marriage, and yet they're pushed into that decision if they want to remain with the person they love. So, right. To just unilaterally say, like, anybody who gets married is a drone, and it's stupid, and it's evil... Again, it's okay if you don't want to get married. That's totally fine. And I'm sure a lot of people have really great reasons. I know a lot of people have really great reasons, and I agree with a lot of those reasons. But to say that nobody else should get married is intolerance. Really, it's really chauvinistic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't mean chauvinistic like, you know, sexist. I mean, it's coming from a place of enormous privilege and ignorance.
Yeah.
Sorry, I said it. There
and,
it is.
You know, I guess as you were talking, I guess it's kind of a choice issue too, you mm-hmm. know? Like, and this is going to be tremendously inflammatory. And if you want to send me hate mail, fine, send me hate mail. But I think that there's a little bit of a parallel between being anti-marriage and being anti-choice. Which, mm. you know, because that they're both issues where the crux of the anti-choice movement is that they don't want you to be able to make certain choices with mm-hmm. your life and with your body. And the crux of the anti-marriage movement is that, you know, they think that people shouldn't be able to make certain choices with their lives and with their relationships. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I guess I really don't get about the movement, is it's supposed to be this progressive movement that pushes for, you know, greater equality or, mm-hmm. you know, kind of a more evolved form of relationships and dealing with them. But at the same time, it amounts to a bunch of people saying, well, I don't think this is right, so therefore you guys shouldn't get to do it mm-hmm. because I don't think it's right. And it's kind of the same as, you know, like the anti-choice crowd saying, well, I don't believe abortion is right, so I'm not content to make my choice for myself. I want to make my choice for you, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the thing. I mean, if you are not into marriage and you don't want to get married and whatever, then that's cool. But I don't understand why people feel the need to get involved in other people's relationships. Mm-hmm. I mean, does my being married make somebody else's, you know, like, partnership with whatever or whoever their partner is any less? I mean, it shouldn't affect them at all.
Mm-mm.
in much the same way that, you know, if I have an abortion, it doesn't impact on another person's choice about whether they're going to do that or not. And I don't know, I just, like, get out of my relationship.
Yeah.
You know, it's mine, I've done with it what I want, and I'm just not into hearing about why I've done a stupid thing, or an
yeah.
anti-feminist thing, or a, you know, whatever. I mean, if you're happy, I think that if you're happy with your relationship, then I think, I don't know.
Some women like being tied up and humiliated. That doesn't mean they're not feminists.
It
yeah. means they know what they want, they know what they like, they're not afraid to ask for it and pursue it, and mind your own goddamn business.
So are you saying that marriage is like a form of like humiliating bondage?
Yes, it's exactly what I'm saying.
Actually, I wouldn't necessarily disagree.
I think that, you know, there's certainly valid arguments for the irrelevance of marriage.
Yes.
But I think until our society can adequately support single people and domestic partnerships, then yeah, marriage is a necessity for some people.
Yeah.
I mean, some people have to get married to get their partner's health benefits.
Yeah.
Maybe if we had a nationalized health system where everyone was taken care of regardless of their marital status, or who they were living with or where they worked, then maybe marriage wouldn't be such a big issue. And likewise, if there was a visa system that brought people in who, you know, wanted to be with their significant others without making that big leap, then maybe marriage wouldn't be as necessary as it is in our culture. I mean, that's not to say that if all these things were magically fixed overnight, that marriage would be obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
I still think it's a matter of personal choice. But, mm-hmm. you know, I think, like I said before, it's just, you know, all of these things kind of add up to, you know, people who are in a position to eschew marriage and say, you know, that anybody wanting to get married is a mindless zombie. It's privilege.
Yes. Yes. Hear, hear. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there are any people who identify as anti-marriage listening to the show. I mean, we don't mean to trash talk you personally or anything like that.
No.
But it's, I guess, at the like the bottom line, it's offensive. I get really offended
mm-hmm.
when I hear people say things like, I'm anti-marriage. Because that makes me think, well, what the fuck? You don't
yeah.
know me. You don't know anything about the circumstances of my marriage or my relationship or
mm-hmm.
or me at all, really.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are passing this judgment that, you know, affects my life. I mean, if I were to meet people and say, you know, I'm anti, I don't know, like, anything. I mean, just, if I were to introduce myself and say, you know, I'm anti-gay, and, you know, I think it's a choice or whatever, and, you know, it's fine, like, I don't hate you or whatever, but I just, I really am anti-gay, I'm opposed to your choice, or, you know, or I'm anti, you know, home ownership or car ownership or whatever. I mean, I've gotten lots of shit from people because I'm not a big fan of cars and driving, and because I'm almost 30 and have never had a license and feel like that's not really that big of a deal. And people get really offended when I say things like, I don't necessarily think that everybody has to drive.
Yeah.
People get really mad about that kind of thing. Like, really mad. And they have all kinds of reasons why they have to drive. Because it's too hot, or it's too cold, or everything's too far away, or they have to get to work at 7:30 in the morning. And it's like, well, you know, fine. But in my life, I've been able to do all of that stuff just fine without ever owning a car or having a license.
And I think you put a lot of people to shame purely by fact that you used to walk around Edmonton in the dead of winter with, like, Vans. Like, yeah, canvas shoes. I'm like, stupid. Holy shit, Jordan's a fucking tough-ass motherfucker. If she can do it, I can do it, damn.
Well, I mean, I'm really, that speaks to me being an idiot more than anything, but you know, like, people get really, people take, you know, driving a car or owning a home as, like, this kind of, this right that, you know, everybody should get to do that, or, you know, like, if you work hard or if you earn enough money, then you should absolutely get to do that, and, you know, of course, it's my right, it's my decision whether or not I want to do that, and, you know, I'm gonna get really mad at you if you challenge, you know, whether or not I need to have a car or whether I need to own a home as opposed to renting or whatever. But, but I mean, I'm gonna feel free to stick my nose into your decision to get married or not. So,
Pazuzu is, like, entranced by my little ringtone.
Yeah, she's really into it. Pazuzu, are you a fan of Oriental music sounding
my
cell
phone? My racist Oriental cell phone.
Oh, she's such an Orientalist. Sorry, my cat's racist. Even though she's black.
She's a black nationalist cat. Let's check email.
Oh, yes. We haven't done that in a long time.
You know, I don't know if we have any, but we'll find out. Yeah. Shit.
So I guess the summary on anti-marriage is...
Don't do it.
Don't do it. It's offensive and it hurts people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes baby Jesus cry.
Yeah. Yeah. And it erased it.
It was pretty shitty of that computer.
It was. Kind of, you know, like, fuck that computer.
Yeah, man. That's a dick move, computer.
Yeah. Thanks, GarageBand.
Air quotes. Garage band.
So anyway,
that's really what you are.
We lost the captivating second half.
Yeah, and I don't even remember what we talked about.
Yeah, I think it was probably boring. So
it's probably to your benefit that the computer fucked us
over. It's probably just as well. Okay, so we talked about anti-marriage, and
yes,
we checked our email and found out that nobody loves us.
Yeah.
And then we went to Rainbow Grocery.
Mm-hmm.
Anything illuminating happened to us at Rainbow Grocery?
Rainbow Grocery hates bulk sesame seeds.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was kind of weird.
I want 2 tons of sesame seeds.
And I remembered one of my, like, top health food store vegan outrages, which is...
What's that?
Well, it's like, you know, like, when you live in a city where there are lots of tourists, like San Francisco, you're constantly having people come up to you and, like, ask you kind of touristy questions because, you know, you live there. And so, of course, you have nothing to do except for give directions to all the tourists.
I really like it here in San Fran.
Yeah. Good.
No. You never say San Fran and you never say Frisco unless you want to be punched in the face when you come here.
Or unless you're the motorcycle company that's, like, right down the street from me, which is the Frisco Choppers.
They're posers.
Yeah, I know. Except that I kind of think it might actually be a bear motorcycle-oriented company, which makes it kind of cute.
Yes.
Though the use of the word Frisco is still totally way...
Yes. Totally out of order, guys.
Yeah. Come on. Out of order. But anyway, so my vegan outrage, it's health food store tourists. It's like people who go to the health food store and they notice that you seem to know what you're buying and like what the things are. And so it's like, oh, what's that? Nutritional yeast. Oh, what's that? What is that? What do you use that for? And what does it taste like? And you're just like, lady, I am just trying to get my groceries and get home without killing anybody because it's coupon day.
Yes.
And, yeah. And, like, the people who come up to you, like, I get it a lot when I'm buying vegan cheese. Like, I'll be in the vegan cheese section, which I'm sorry to everybody who's, like, sitting there at home cursing me and being like, you need to shut the fuck up. You live in a place where you're close enough to walk to a market with a vegan cheese section, so shut up. You're right. I should shut up.
But well, to be fair, the vegan cheese section is like 5 products wide.
Yeah.
And it's in the middle of the non-vegan cheese section.
So, yeah, you do have to like walk through all the like gross cheese smell stuff. But I always get people being like, so, this is non-dairy. And I'll be like, yep. And then they'll just start asking me the most inane questions about cheese and vegan cheese. And am I vegan? And, you know, does it taste like real cheese? And I don't know. If you don't
taste like dead babies.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way I like my cheese to taste. So, fuck off. Anyways.
My niece is vegan.
Yeah.
She made a great tuna casserole the other day. Yeah. Lucy's like, that shit ain't vegan.
That's right, Lucy. You tell the world.
I will. I'm gonna let everybody know.
That's my extremely dysfunctional cat, Lucy. She's coming out of her shell a little bit to say hello.
Yeah, she's downright social today.
Yeah, yep. Normally, Lucy cannot be touched. But today, it's okay. So, yeah, that was my biggest thing that happened at Rainbow. That and the really annoying hippies that were, like, just kind of, like, hanging out in Rainbow. Like, it was a bar. Like, and they were in
that
my way, like,
nuts.
Every turn that I took, they were, like, right there in my way. And they were, like, all, like, gross with their giant dreadlocks. And I was like, if you turn around too fast, you're gonna hit me with one of those.
So, how was your Burning Man experience, brah?
Yeah.
Such judgmental bitches.
Yeah, we are, but that's what people like about us.
That's true.
So speaking of Burning Man, did you ever read that article that I sent you about the truth about Burning Man?
I didn't, and I'm a horrible person for not reading it.
Okay, so...
So give me the down low about it.
The Huffington Post...
The lowdown, I mean.
...had one of their, you know, contributors wrote a piece about, you know, the truth about Burning Man. And, I was kind of hoping that the truth about Burning Man would be that it's completely lame and that it's being... And that what once may have been a revolutionary, if annoying, gathering is now, like, being taken over by, you know, like, richer and richer, like, and squarer people who just basically want to kind of slum it and have this, you know, experience for a week and they go back to their, you know, fucking law firm jobs or whatever. but this guy... did not say any of that stuff. He basically said that he went to Burning Man and that it was this totally revolutionary experience of an intentional community and, you know, teamwork and, you know, all this stuff. And I was very disappointed in his lack of critical thinking.
I wanted to see some shit talking.
Yeah, no kidding. I did, because, like, Burning Man sounds like my idea of hell. Like, seriously, it sounds exactly like my idea of hell on earth, you know? And I guess here's a question for you.
Unsolicited massages in the desert?
Fuck no. Fuck no! If I want a massage, I want to solicit it, damn it. But, okay, so my question for you. How do you deal with the social situations that inevitably arise where you are with someone who is a perfectly nice person and who you, you know, have absolutely nothing against and they're totally nice, but they have, like, you know, they're like a Burning Man person or they have, like, just the most god-awful taste in music and they, like, want to talk about it or something like that. 'Cause I'm an asshole and I have a real hard time dealing with those kinds of situations. Like, the other day, well, a while ago, I went to a function with Mike for his work, and there were two people there who were vegan, like us, and they were super, super, super nice. Like, really cool, really nice people. And we got along really well. And then towards the end of the thing, they were like, yeah, you know, like, we should hang out or something. And we're like, yeah, okay. And then they were like, you know, do you know Love Fest? And we were both just kind of like, we both did like a mental face palm. Because like, we were just like, oh, God. And they're like, and we're like, no. And they were like, oh, yeah, no, it's super awesome. Like, we went last year and it was so much fun. And we had like a really good time. And, you know, because they live in not in San Francisco, like in another part of the thing. And or another, like a suburb or whatever. And we were both just kind of like, we really, like, you guys are really nice people, and we totally like to hang out with you, but fuck no are we going to Love Fest. Like, no way. Like, you cannot get farther away from our areas of interest.
It seems like
Love Fest.
Love Fest, my impression of Love Fest is that it's, like, a really tacky, straight version of Pride.
Sort of. I guess it's a ripoff of something that happens in Berlin.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like, the big techno musical music festival. And I should explain what Love Fest is. Because, yeah, the original in Berlin is, like, this big electronic music festival and, like, parade and kind of, like, it's almost like a big, like, kind of city-wide rave kind of thing, but, like, super positive and, like, you know, really happy. And,
mm-hmm.
again, it sounds like my version of hell. But,
So, of course, in America, it's all about people getting stabbed and
well, it's
slipping date rape drugs and drinks.
I mean, it's supposed to be the same kind of thing, right? Like, there's a big parade and there's lots of, like, electronic music and all this stuff. But really, I think it's, you know, it's just a bunch of people who would be at raves if raves were still going on at, like, this big festival. And I'm just like, God, I'm so not
1995 called.
Yeah.
It wants its party back.
And I don't care. I mean, people can do what they want, and I don't really care, but,
Well, you should have just invited them to go to, Folsom Street Fair this weekend.
Yeah, I should. I'm going to Folsom Street Fair.
I'll come with you.
Okay, awesome. Mike took the day off, I got the day off.
We can be terrified of the random, you know, public masturbators together.
Awesome. I'm gonna say right now, I'm not gonna be terrified. I'm gonna be, like, fascinated. I'm gonna be standing there just, like, watching.
Personally speaking, I've seen a dude jerk off. It's not that exciting.
I know, and no, you know,
I mean, maybe the first time there's a surprise at the end, but, you know, once you know how it ends, it's, you've seen one dude jerking off, you've seen them all.
I'm a married woman, I know how it ends, but I've never seen all that in public before. And
yeah.
I anticipate being kind of awestruck at, like, people's ability to do that.
You'll get over it very quickly.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
You're like, Jesus Christ, this is the 15th masturbating man I've seen today.
Though, if there's the option, I will totally pay $5 to get a picture of Mike with someone's balls on his head. Because I've heard that that happens sometimes.
That would be great.
Yeah.
I'd give you the $5 for that picture.
I don't know if he'd let me. But
if I can get it made into a little keychain, I'll take it with me everywhere I go.
If I got that picture, I'd make it into a t-shirt and take it, wear it, like, every single day.
I remember a few years ago, we should explain what Folsom Street Fair is
to listeners
who are not familiar with Frisco.
Yeah.
Folsom Street Fair is, like, the kinky pride. It's, it's where,
Well, Folsom Street is, like, an area of San Francisco, which is right near where I live, and it's got a lot of bear and leather bars, and then also, you know, kind of leather stores and
S&M.
Yeah. So it's all that, like, bear and S&M and leather kind of stuff going on.
It's basically, like, a big free-for-all. I mean, let's be clear. San Francisco is a place where any public gathering of more than 20 people, there's at least one naked person.
Yes.
And Folsom Street Fair is, like, every single one of those naked people together, and some of them with, like, you know, butt plugs with horse tails attached,
right.
You know, dressed up as animals, and yeah, it's just, it's some crazy kinky shit, and we're gonna go and ogle the freaks.
Yeah.
yeah, I remember a few years ago, I was in a hotel, back when I had a high-flying executive job, and, I was watching TV in the hotel, and I had it on Fox News, because sometimes I find that shit hilarious to watch when it's not cripplingly depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this whole feature about Folsom Street Fair, because some, like, super conservative Christian organization had gone and taken undercover video, you know,
oh
like,
my God.
Like a video camera, something you have to sneak into Folsom Street Fair. It's like everybody's filming for like masturbation material later
yeah,
on.
Yeah, no kidding.
So they took this like shocking expose video of this horrible gathering of depraved souls in San Francisco, the most soulless city in the Western Hemisphere.
Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah. And, this organization had taken these videos and were, like, distributing them amongst their organization to be like, you know, be vigilant, be aware, these freaks are, you know, recruiting your children.
Yeah. And as a result, all of their children jerked off to the video.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the fact that somewhere there's a person that likes to dress up like a horse and be whipped, you know, totally threatens their entire worldview. And so it was hilarious because it was on Fox News and they just kept showing, you know, there's this whole paradox with Fox News where they pretend to be outraged and disgusted and yet they'll show this, you know, outrageous, disgusting video 10 times in a row.
Right.
Which is what they did with, they did something about like Girls Gone Wild or no, it was Spring Break. They did a report on how the depravity of Spring Break and these horrible young people that have no morals and no standards of living. And oh my God, they're such horrible people. But it was just like the whole report was like dubbed over 20 minutes of like a, you know, a loop of video of girls going like, woo,
oh,
showing
man.
Their breasts and bouncing around bikinis and, you know, chugging beer bongs and stuff. And they're like, look how horrible this is. Look at it. Ooh. Oh, it's so horrible. Oh, it makes me sick. Oh, you know, and it was like the same thing with the Folsom Street Fair. They showed the same woman with a bit in her mouth, you know, prancing around like a little horse. And, you know, the same, like, bear getting whipped by his leather daddy. And, you know, they showed it over and over and over, like, oh, look how horrible these people are. Ooh, oh, you know, while secretly right. in some reptilian part of their brain, they're going, oh, my God, tits, tits!
Yeah, yeah, give me some of that.
Yeah, so it was very funny because I think in, you know, they could just ignore it because it doesn't affect them. And, you know, these people are consenting adults and they're getting their jollies off by being kinky and, you know, not hurting each other unless that's what they actually want.
Yeah.
And they could just ignore it. Or they could make a video of it and distribute it and, you know, act shocked and disgusted and titillated.
Right.
And expose their children to the world of kinks.
Right.
At a tender young age.
Yes.
So they're probably doing more harm than good.
Yeah, probably. They've created, like, this whole generation of fetishists who would never have been yeah. created otherwise, except that they've been shown these, like, highly subversive images.
Yeah.
And now these kids are going to be like, all right, so I want to be a horse.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, good work, Fox News.
Yeah, good job.
Undercover Christian organization.
Way to be your own undoing.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
We do. oh, okay. I have something to talk about.
Yes.
Positive.
Excellent.
That I did the other day.
More positive than people getting whipped and masturbating in public?
Only marginally.
Okay.
But, yes. So, took some time out of my busy schedule the other day to write and send some letters to vegans in jail.
Oh, cool.
Some of them were the Shack 7, and then
awesome.
Some others were, like, kind of environmental activists, and some were just kind of random vegan activists. But there is, on Facebook now, a really awesome group called Vegans in the Prison System, and they kind of show
VIPs.
Yes, that's what they're called.
Awesome.
And they have, you know, like a different kind of spotlight, I think every day or every couple days, and they just show, they like will say, you know, hey, you should write this person today.
Oh, that's
and they'll
awesome.
Give like their address and a little blurb about, you know, what they did. But it's mostly like people who, you know, were like caught releasing mink or
right
or that kind of thing. And, you know, while I'm not necessarily 100% on board with all of the tactics that environmental and animal rights activists use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I have very conflicting feelings on a lot of those kind of tactics. I still think that, you know, a lot of these people who are going to jail really shouldn't be going to jail. And
yeah.
Especially not, like, federal penitentiaries and stuff like that. I think that, you know, doing things, especially like the Shack 7 did, which are like, you know, publishing websites that report on animal rights activities and and doing kind of like minor annoyance kinds of things, like sending black faxes and writing letters and picketing and stuff like that. They really shouldn't be in jail. You know, I think they're kind of, a lot of those people are prepared to accept misdemeanor charges or, you know, fines or whatever else, or community service, but it really just flat out sucks that, that these people are getting thrown in the federal prison system and left to rot. And in a lot of cases, like, have a really hard time because they can't get vegan food.
Yeah.
And some of them now, I learned because when I was looking up, I got inspired and I started looking at Will Potter's very excellent blog, What Green is the New Red, which talks at length about the green scare, as it's being called, or the, you know, the current climate of hostility towards, you know, animal and environmental activists.
Yeah.
Under the guise of terrorism prevention. And he's talking about now these new kinds of detention centers, which I'm afraid the name of them has slipped my mind now, but basically they're designed to take people out of the public eye entirely. People who have been convicted of, you know, like crimes with ties to terrorism and that kind of thing. And basically I think it prevents them from really getting any mail or really communicating much. It just kind of isolates them completely and takes them out of circulation entirely. And two animal rights activists who have been convicted under the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act have now been hauled off to these places. So
it's basically 100% American and everything we stand for in our Constitution.
Yeah, totally. And I'm really hoping that Obama is going to take a good hard look at those kinds of things and maybe do away with them. But definitely do away with them. So I highly recommend checking out the Facebook group, Vegans in the Prison System, and writing some letters. It doesn't take very long, and
I think I would like to do that.
Yeah, and I've gotten a few letters back from what I've written in the past.
Oh, cool.
And it's really cool.
That's great.
And I think that they really like to hear just about anything. I know that I felt really self-conscious. I was like, oh my God, I'm such an asshole. I'm writing these people and being like, so here's what I do. And here's my life. But I think that really, like, I wrote a lot about my cat, and they seem to really like hearing about that. And I wrote a little bit about, you know, like, the kind of the vegan stuff that I did in my life and all that stuff. I think it makes a really big difference. I think you can really brighten someone's day, and it costs, like, what,
that's awesome.
44 cents is what a stamp is here.
So I still have some of my forever stamps that I bought before the postage went up again.
Oh,
so.
Man. That's a...
I'm a savvy consumer.
So, you have no excuse at all.
I don't. And I'm gonna fucking do it right away.
Awesome. And then, also check out Will Potter's blog, Green is the New Red, because he...
I will.
He keeps a lot of tabs on a lot of the vegan, like, and animal rights activists who are in prison or who are getting tried for various things. And he also has, like, he's a fantastic writer. And really has done really great work looking at the legislation that targets animal rights activists, like
awesome.
The Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act and that kind of thing. And he often has kind of things that you can do, like write to your member of Congress.
Or nice.
Whatever. So that's my, you know, do-gooder, goody-two-shoes, you know, holier-than-thou vegan moment for this week. I highly recommend it.
That's awesome.
You have like the best smug sense of accomplishment for the rest of the day. It's great.
That is great.
You could do it while you're
it's the cheapest way to feel superior to other people.
It is. Short of, you know,
when you can't buy a Lexus, you can write to some prisoners.
It's true. And you know, if you're lucky, maybe you'll get your name on some kind of watch list.
Oh boy.
No, you probably won't. Yeah. I think you can write to prisoners. But yes.
So, speaking of quote-unquote eco-terrorism, which I think is a load of bullshit.
Yes.
But, I recently finished listening to, and I believe you recently took out from the San Francisco Library,
yes.
The Whale Warriors.
I'm actually going to start that tonight.
Okay, awesome. I was going to ask if you'd started it yet. But, yes, it's an excellent book about, Sea Shepherd and, the Farley Moat. Sea Shepherd is an organization that was founded by one of the original founders of Greenpeace, who felt that Greenpeace wasn't being
radical enough and wasn't taking extreme enough measures to prevent the slaughter of whales.
And they weren't vegan enough.
Yeah, and the Farley Moat is their boat, and it's a vegan boat. And yeah, this reporter went on their boat during the whaling season. I forget what year it was, but it was very recently. He does mention in the book the leaked files about the FBI infiltrating vegan potlucks and stuff like that. So it's a fairly recent book. I learned a lot of stuff. I mean, obviously I knew, in my heart of hearts, I knew that whaling was fucked up and wrong, but apparently there's not even a demand for it, as Japan claims. A very, very small percentage of Japanese citizens think that it's essential to Japanese culture, and actually traditional whaling was only done in 2 coastal villages in Japan, in pre-war Japan. So it's not even like a national symbol. It was done in 2 villages, and most people in modern Japan don't have any interest in eating whale meat. And I forget which year it was. It was recently. It was in the past 10 years. There was such an excess of whale meat after the whaling season that it ended up being put into dog and cat food.
Oh, yikes.
So, yeah, that's... The industry is basically, you know, going out of sheer stubborn determination to, you know, confound those environmentalists. So, yeah, it was interesting. The only thing I objected to was the fact that a lot of the crew members of Sea Shepherd referred to the Japanese whalers as Japs, which, you know, just because they're doing something that's fucked up doesn't mean you can call them racist names. So.
Yes, you can call them jerks.
Yeah.
same first letter, same yes. number of syllables.
Yeah, so, yeah, knock it off, guys.
Yeah.
Let's be cool. Let's set a good example. So, yeah, I hope you enjoy it, and I can't wait to discuss it further with you.
Yeah, yeah, I am. I've been in the dark, sort of, about Sea Shepherd for a while. I knew that they existed, and I sort of knew what they did a little bit, but, yes, I'm very excited to find out more about the organization and get to be even more of a smug vegan asshole. That's one of my favorite hobbies. So speaking of smug vegan assholes, Vegan Mofo is coming up.
Oh, yes.
Are you interested in Vegan Mofo at all? Or is it kind of under your vegan radar?
It's kind of under my vegan radar. So why don't you explain to me and to our listeners all about Vegan Mofo?
Well, Vegan Mofo is the vegan month food. Which I know we can all get behind.
Hells yeah.
And basically it's a challenge to vegan bloggers to get the lead out and really write about vegan food a lot and do kind of new things that will challenge your skills and your comfort zone a little bit and really kind of make a concerted effort to really get the message out and kind of get the tag counts on blogs up and,
nice.
You know. Hopefully just raise awareness about how awesome vegan food is. And so I've got a blog about food that I very rarely update, but but that I do on Vegan Mofo. So I'm looking forward to doing a couple of projects
awesome.
This year, including grits. My
awesome.
First time making grits
I've
as a
never
Canadian.
Never made grits.
And I'm going to do Kitty from, you know,
Papa
Kitty
tofu.
Cake and Papa Tofu and PakuPaku.info, who is also curating the list of participating Vegan Mofo blogs.
So Kitty!
If you want to get involved, then head over to her blog, which is Cake Maker to the Stars. I'm making her recipe for cheesy, in quotation marks, grits. And then
ooh.
I'm going to do some plain grits. And
well, she's a good Southern girl, so she would know.
Yeah, yeah. So
awesome.
I'm gonna document, you know, a Canadian's first time making grits.
Awesome.
And then I'm also going to pay a loving homage to my boyfriend, Alton Brown. And I don't know what day of the week yet, but one day of the week will be Alton Brown Day. Then I'll veganize an Alton Brown recipe. And then, you know, gaze lovingly at the framed photo of him that I have in my kitchen while I do it.
Surrounded by votives.
Right. And, you know, on top of my hope chest.
with a little lock of his hair that you stole from a book signing.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, Alton Brown is a cool guy. I mean, he eats meat and everything, and I think I hear that he's a Christian, but he's obviously a Christian who's down with at least some science and not like an ignorant, you know, asshole. So, whatever. So I can kind of deal with that a little bit. But I recently read a quote by him that said something like, you know, we just don't know how to feed ourselves in this country. We just go out and buy all this processed stuff. And you know, we need to stop doing that. We need to learn how to, you know, feed ourselves, feed our communities, and for God's sake, feed our children.
Yeah.
And I was just like, right on, Alton Brown. You know, I know he's a parent. He has at least one young child. And I really like to see the parents stepping up and, you know, worrying about what their kids eat. Because
nice.
I know that there are a few things that I find more disturbing than, you know, health-conscious parents who feed their kids McDonald's or,
yeah,
you know, it makes me very sad to see these poor kids, and there's more and more of them, I think, coming up and getting fed all this shit that kind of, like,
yeah,
destroys their ability to concentrate and think properly and mm-hmm. doesn't nourish
destroys
them
their
well.
Bodies.
And, yeah, it's just, it's very sad. So Alton Brown is, you know, after my husband, the love of my life, so...
Well, you know, I think that's awesome, but I caution you to just keep an eye on him because Jamie Oliver said the same thing about British school kids, and he had a big expose about the food that children were being fed in British schools, and, you know, he revolutionized school lunches in the UK and, you know, really introduced the concept of healthy eating to a lot of parents. And last week he shot and skinned an alligator, I guess, just for the fuck of it, you know?
That's true. That's true. That's
because, you know, if you do it for their shoes, it's totally inhumane and disgusting. But if you're a celebrity chef, then hey.
Right.
Fair game.
I don't think that Alton Brown would do something like that.
I hope not.
I don't know. I mean, maybe
I'd like to have faith in Alton Brown.
Me too. I mean, the guy, he's a good guy,
yeah.
I think. At heart.
And unlike Jamie Oliver, he doesn't appear to pretend to be working class in order to gain credibility.
Yes.
He's comfortable being who he is.
Yes. Jamie Oliver is also kind of shockingly young, though, I realized. He's what? He's 34 or something right now?
Yeah, he's quite young.
He's very young. He looks a little older than that, I think. Like, he's all doughy and kind of looks like a little more lived in, I think, than he, you know, I don't know. So maybe, I mean, what I mean by that is just, you know, I'd always thought that he was, like, in his 40s and was maybe a little more mature, but he's maybe, no, he's not young enough to chalk it up to youthful indiscretion, but...
Well, you know, I love the UK, and I love our British listeners, if we have any, but I have to come right out there and say that, in general, the British do not age well. Sorry. It's just how it is.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, I think that could explain some of it.
I see. It could be.
Oftentimes, and Pranjal's allowed a little more leeway with this because, my boyfriend, because he's originally from a country that was colonized by the British for 400 years, and then grew up in another country that was colonized by the British for 100 years, those countries being respectively India and Hong Kong. And so I think he's allowed a little more leeway in totally giving the British tons and tons of shit.
Yes.
And he will often pull up a picture of, it's usually a football coach, and he'll be like, look how British that guy is. And I'm like, yeah, that guy's really British. You know, there's some people that are just like, it's written across their face. British.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry, Jamie Oliver. You just got a case of British genes. That's just how it is.
And maybe a little bit of British karma for skinning alligators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, the entire British population is suffering. It's like the picture of Dorian Gray.
Yeah.
The entire British population has to, like, grow old horribly and grotesquely for their past crimes against other nations. Which doesn't bode well for Americans, but...
Yes, that's true. I am happy to be a Canadian.
But at least I ain't going around skinning alligator shit.
That's true. So on that note, skinning alligators,
I hope I hope to see one day in the future a picture of an alligator wearing shoes made out of Jamie Oliver skin. Carrying a matching handbag.
Me too. We can only dream.
Yeah.
Well then, to your listeners, I think that's probably it for us.
I think we've alienated and offended enough people for one day.
Yeah.
We'll be back soon with some more alienation and offense.
Yeah. And a report on the Folsom Street
Fair. Yeah, yeah. Woo-woo!
Which is going to be pretty awesome, I think. So.
And we'll have some false outrage like Fox News. We'll thinly disguise our titillation with outrage.
We'll bring a camera and take lots of pictures so that we can share them with you. And perhaps on this blog post, we can post a link to the Folsom Street Fair website, which is in and of itself pretty scandalous.
Yeah.
So.
We can also post a link to some of the vegan prisoner outreach organizations.
Yes, we will also do that. So.
But you know, we'll also let you gawk at the freaks.
Right. You can have your yin and your yang.
Yeah.
All in one. So this karmically balanced edition of the Cosmopolitan Hour is drawing to a close.
Yes.
So we will see you next week.
And scene.